KBLULP in Logan. My name is Richard Ireland Blake. I'd like to welcome you all back now to my sixth episode of Ballad of Shanish, or Folklore Now. In this episode, I thought I'd take a rather interesting track here at the beginning. I'll let you decide just how interesting you think it is, of course. But I want to ask you all a question. What would you do for a Klondike bar? Or better yet, what will you do to secure that next Pokemon, that rare Pokemon that just never seems to pop up except when you aren't necessarily ready to receive it, your phone's in your pocket or whatever? I talk to many people, almost everybody who I go and I talk to and I ask this question, they all seem to have the Pokemon Go app on their phone. And many of them, of course, go out and chase the Pokemon in different places. And one of the things that you, of course, need to notice, when you first open it up, on the screen, it always tells you, remember to stay alert at all times and be aware of your surroundings. Do not play while driving. And, you know, how many people out there end up ignoring that particular bit of advice? And don't step into dangerous places because it's not worth your life to get that next Pokemon. But what I'm going to deal with now is I actually came across a YouTube site where there are 10 examples of incidents that happened when people were out chasing those Pokemon. I had always wondered if there was anyone who had collected stories about accidents because of playing Pokemon Go. These 10 examples, I think, are really interesting. Remember, Pokemon Go, you can play worldwide. Therefore, everywhere you can find yourself chasing after Pokemon. The rarer, the better, of course. And when you travel to a new area, suddenly new ones show up that you've never seen before. What I'm going to do now, then, is I'm going to play you this audio clip from YouTube about Pokemon Go, these top 10 things that this narrator is going to talk about, and then I am going to build upon that and, of course, ask you to think about what kind of things that you've done, what areas you've wound up in when you were out there chasing those Pokemon yourself. And so here we go.
So right now, if you have a phone, there's a very good chance that you have Pokemon Go installed on it right now. Since its release, it's become one of the most successful app games ever and is played by an estimated 9.5 million players daily, which is just nuts. But when that many people are involved in a game that requires you to move while staring at your phone, safety becomes a very real concern. In fact, these concerns have actually led to Niantic, the company behind the game, to issue in-game safety warnings, but as you're about to find out, those don't always work. A lot of players have been ignoring the basic safety while playing the game, and they've either gotten hurt, robbed, or worse, actually died. So if you or someone you know plays Pokemon Go, you're going to want to watch this so that you can avoid these pitfalls. So, here they are. 10 terrible accidents caused by Pokemon Go. Number one is falling off a cliff. Oh my god, a Snorlax! What? If you're going to play this game, don't play it near a cliff. I know that kind of is common sense, but for some people, they just care how many rare monsters are nearby, not what the risk of dying is. Well, on August 13th, two guys learned this the hard way. Two men in their early 20s were playing the game along some cliffs in San Diego, California, when both of them walked right off the edge of a cliff. The first fell over 27 meters, while the second fell over 15 meters.
My legs are broken, but at least I caught them.
Apparently, they both ignored fences and warning signs about the potential falling danger. But what's most unbelievable and good about this story is that they were somehow discovered and taken to a hospital and both survived. Just because you follow a legendary bird off a cliff don't mean it's gonna catch you. Number two is getting mugged.
Oh my god. Oh my god, I almost got him! And my wallet's gone.
For those of you that aren't familiar with the game, in the world of Pokemon, there's a team called Rocket that's an evil group bent on stealing Pokemon and hurting others. Well, one group of players decided that it would be a good idea to form a real-life Team Rocket and began actually mugging people. Yo guys, they don't have any rare Japanese monsters on them. They have money and pictures of their kids. Just 3 days after this game was released in July of this year, a group of teens ranging from 16 to 18 were suspected to be behind up to 11 robberies, including one call to police in O'Fallon, Missouri, that is just gonna make you very sad. The call was about the group of teens who were found hiding out at a Pokestop who would literally rob anyone at gunpoint that walked by to take advantage of.
Yo, you want that Charizard beside me? You best keep walking, sucker. This is my Pokestop.
Ain't no gangster like a digital gangster. Number three is getting lost in a cave. Hoping to find some rare Pokemon in the darkness of underground tunnels, a group of four teenagers wandered into some caves in Wilshire, England. But instead of finding a legendary bird, these teens found regret. The cave, as it turns out, was a huge maze filled with twists and turns in intricate passageways. You know, like a cave. They ended up searching for an exit for hours upon hours until finally one of them found an open air part of the rock and managed to get a cell phone signal to call for help. It took three firefighter crews joining forces with mine rescue experts in order to save them. Hello? Hello? Hi. Yeah, stuck in a cave? Yeah, stuck in a cave. Yep, another one. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Charizard. Yeah, almost, didn't get him. Number four is a car accident. Yo, seriously? Don't do this while you're driving. Stephen Carey, a 28-year-old former Marine from Auburn, New York, was playing Pokemon Go when he spotted a Lapras, a rare water-type Pokemon, on his screen back in July. Now, he believed, oh, it must be just down the street. So, he jumped into his brother's car and drove almost immediately into a tree. Carey suffered a broken ankle, lacerations to his leg, and never ended up finding that Pokemon, but was otherwise alright. Zachary Carey, his brother, and the car's owner ended up starting a GoFundMe campaign appropriately titled, Pokemon Bro Wrecked My Car. Okay, that's clever. Number five is a near drowning. Okay, I know the tide's rising and I could die, but I need that Squirtle! On July 29th, six teenagers decided to hunt for Pokemon at an abandoned old pier on Burnbeck Island in Somerset, England. The group didn't really care too much about the rapidly rising water that was effectively cutting them off from the mainland because, hey, gotta catch them all! But lucky for them, people saw them and rescue crews were quickly alerted to their presence and helped them to safety before they drowned. The police, who have actually applauded the active lifestyle that the game encourages, was forced to release a statement reminding everyone, actually, I got it right here, don't be stupid. Oh, sorry, that's not exactly what it said. What it actually said is Pokemon aren't worth your lives, so be careful. Number six is wandering into landmines. In some parts of the world, players need not only watch out for Pokestops and gyms, but explosives. In Bosnia, reports have come in that players are ignoring warning signs and wandering into dangerous areas full of live explosives. Authorities actually had to release a statement begging people not to do that. Apparently, landmines left over from the Bosnian War that lasted from 1992 through 1995 riddle a popular forest floor where players can find some rare Pokemon. I don't want to claim Darwinism here or anything like that, but there's a reason that it's not called survival of the dumbest. I'm not suggesting that we kill all the dumb people, but, you know, like the meme says, we should just remove all the warning labels and let the problem sort itself out. Number seven is finding a dead body. So far, these have all been physical dangers, so let's mix it up with a case that is sure to do lasting psychological damage. On July 8th, 19-year-old Shayla Wiggins was playing Pokemon Go in Riverton, Wyoming, when she suddenly came across the dead body of a man. As it turns out, according to the police, the man had accidentally drowned and had washed up, and she was the lucky one to find him.
Well, that's a weird-looking Pokemon.
But believe it or not, this was not an isolated incident. Since then, two more dead bodies have been discovered, with the most recent one being found in San Diego, California. Number eight is crashing into a police car. In July in Quebec City, a young man and his passenger were playing Pokemon Go while driving, which always ends up with a great result. But no, they didn't hit a tree, oh no. They hit a police cruiser and sent two cops inside of it to the hospital. They ended up reversing their car while playing and crashed directly into the front of the cruiser, who were following them for playing the game. There have been other reported incidents of people hitting police cars, regular cars, and getting slapped with trespassing fines all to find the rarest of the rare Japanese monsters. Number 9 is wandering onto a highway.
This seems like a good idea.
Almost immediately after the game was released, 15-year-old Autumn Deseroth of Western Pennsylvania was so excited about the game, she played it non-stop. That is until, as she claims, the game led her onto a busy highway outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then she had to stop. Stopped by cars. She attempted to cross the street while playing the game and, yes, was struck by a car.
Who would have seen that coming?
Unbelievably, she only had minor injuries, which her doctors found to be an incredible stroke of luck, considering she was hit by a car.
On the highway. Going really fast.
Too many of y'all are tempting fate. And number 10 is death by shooting. Oh yes, Pokemon Go has already claimed its first real life death. On July 20th, 18-year-old Jerzen Lopez de Leon was shot and killed in Guatemala while playing Pokemon Go with his cousin, who, unlike Jerzen, actually survived the shooting. On August 6th, 20-year-old Calvin Riley was shot by an unknown assailant while playing the game with a friend in San Francisco, California. But what's most scary about this story is that the gunman apparently had no motive at all to do what he did. And then, of course, there's the case of the 19-year-old and the 16-year-old who wandered upon a man's property in Flagler County, Florida, who were mistaken for thieves and were approached by the property owner with a handgun. This game, man, I'm telling you, it's gonna cull the herd of stupid people. So that's it, 10 cases of crazy stories that have happened since this game is released. And it's not even done yet. I'm sure more are going to come out after this video is released. However, I wanna know from you guys, which one on this list freaks you out the most, and have you ever been in a situation where you've been in danger because of Pokemon Go?
Now, which one of these stories happens to be your favorite? Me, personally, I think it's interesting. I like the one about the person wandering up on the highway or the person walking into a dangerous area where unexploded ordnance might happen to be. But you don't want to laugh when people get hurt really bad, but you gotta give it a chuckle or looking back in hindsight as to the kinds of things that people do just to get that Pokemon. When I picked up the game and I was walking around on campus and I was going and looking for pretty much one of those Pokeball stations, and someone saw me wandering around to find exactly where that spot was, and they thought that I was lost and didn't know where I was going, despite the fact that I have been on that campus for almost 2 years and I knew where I was going. I just was trying to get that Pokeball, that place to refill my Pokeballs. So people will think of you as kind of weird, probably doing it. I don't know if I see a lot of people playing Pokemon Go on campus. I believe they are. People have their phones out all the time. You just don't know if they are talking to someone or if you're wandering around. The giveaway will probably be if they keep their phone out in front of them and they're always looking at it and looking around at the same time. They're either following map directions or they're playing Pokemon Go. Whichever you feel is the most likely, I'll let you decide for yourself. Pokemon Go is going to be around for quite a long time, and people are always going to enjoy doing it. And sadly, there are likely to be a lot more accidents to come here in the future. I'll have to check back with this guy who did this video, this recording, and see if he's got any other stories about problems caused by Pokemon Go. Now that we've talked about that little humorous beginning, it's always good to follow along on a slightly different track every now and then. I do like talking to people about modern day technology, but it's always good to revert back to the things that you understand the best. The next thing I want to talk about concerns certain kinds of stories that have come down to us through the ages. A lot of times people will hear stories and they say, oh yeah, I heard that story, but this is what happened in the version that I heard, or this is what happened when that person went into the house. He didn't get crushed by an anvil. He fell into a pit full of alligators or whatever. That's just something popping off the top of my head. I'm not referring to any particular stories that deal with anvils and alligators. What I'd like to start with then is the second book that I came across that I read about folklore was written by a folklorist named Richard Dorson. Now, the first book I read was by Jan Brunvand, and they're both pretty much writing about American folklore. Richard Dorson is much older His book came out much earlier, but John Birnbaum's just happened to be the one I picked up first because it was longer and it looked like it might be a little more interesting. But one of the things that Richard Dorson did was he went around collecting stories like so many of them do. And he talks about one subject, like I said, that has so many different versions told by so many different people that obviously not all of them are likely to be actual factual events. Some of them may be things that someone heard from their friend or something that someone thought up that they wanted to tell a group of people sitting by a campfire if they wanted to hear something spooky. One of the subjects is that of the ghostly hitchhiker. The idea of the ghostly hitchhiker, of course, is you going out and you're driving by a place and you happen to see someone standing on the side of the road. You offer that person a ride, and then when the person gets in there, they tell you where does they want to go. You drive and take them there and says, here, it's like, oh, we're here. But then that person is gone. The door never opened. And suddenly you're thinking, oh my gosh, that was a ghost in my car that I just allowed in there. One of the things in Richard Dorson's book deals with one of those stories. And this version that I came across online is actually a little bit longer than what Richard Dorson had to say. Richard Dorson tended to talk about a lot of generalities and didn't go into any specific stories, except for one. And the version that he told is the same one that I have here on this site that I'm going to read to you. It was just that it gives a little bit more detail, and I'm assuming that this is the story that Richard Dorson had come across. So, on a cold and rainy night, a young man on his way to a party at a local dance hall, and on his way there, he happened to offer a ride to an attractive young woman who agreed to go with him to the dance. Everyone at the party found her to be very charming, and after the dance was over, the young man offered to drive her home as the night had turned quite chilly. She accepted, and because it was so cold out, he gave her his coat to wear. He asked for her address and she gave it to him. And a short time later, they pulled up into the driveway of the house where the girl said that she lived. And the driver turned to tell her that they had arrived. To his astonishment, she was gone. The passenger seat of the car was empty. Although the door had never opened, the girl had simply vanished. Now, not knowing what else to do, the man went up to the door and knocked. An elderly woman answered the door, and he explained to her what had happened. Right away, she seemed to know exactly what he was talking about. The young girl he had taken to the dance was her daughter, but she had died 10 years before in an auto accident. The horrified young man didn't believe her, even though the name of the girl he had taken to the dance and the woman's daughter were the same. In order to convince him, the old woman even told him where to find the grave of the dead girl in the local cemetery. The young man quickly drove there and, following the directions he had been given, found the stone with the girl's name on it. Followed neatly over the top of the marker was the coat that the girl had borrowed to wear to ward off the chilly cold night. And then, of course, stories like this are similar to other ghostly hitchhikers events that you hear about. You know, who was this girl? Who was this guy? There's always someone at the location that they go to who actually knows the story behind the ghost. I have yet to come across a story where the identity of the hitchhiker was never discovered. It would probably be a little bit creepier if you didn't know, but then you could just write it off as seeing some hallucination. This is a major story, like I said, that comes down to us, and there are new versions coming up upon us every day. Welcome back to Baladishanish Folklore Now. Now that we have discussed Pokemon Go, we've talked about the ghostly hitchhiker through Richard Dorson. I want to take us into another slightly different direction. Being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or the Mormons, I came across something that I found was interesting, especially when these things were pointed out to me. At the Western States Folklore Society that was taking place in Provo, Utah, of course, a lot of people in Utah were going to be there at this Western States meeting, and I'd say a majority of people who live in Utah are probably Mormons, and therefore a lot of the folklorists who show up at these meetings are going to be as well. One of the things that I had come across was someone talking about, what about your own folklore? Someone asks, oh, so what kind of folklore do Mormons have, or you know, what is the kind of folklore that your own area, that you personally live with? What are the stories, what's the folk tales, what are the traditions that fall within that particular culture? And of course, the first reaction that you have whenever someone asks you something like that is, well, I don't really have any folklore. We just do what we do, and there's really nothing spectacular about it. There's nothing that is worthy of note that you can attach to Mormons. And apparently, Richard Dorson asked a folklorist who was a Mormon about, well, what about the stories of the three Nephites? And of course, we'd stop and think about this and say, oh, okay, I guess that does kind of fall into the category of folklore. If you really believe something and you believe something's true, that still falls within the folklore realm, because that's your folk belief. The three Nephites, there are several stories about these three people over the ages. I didn't hear a lot of them growing up in California, because Mormons in California didn't seem to talk about that a whole lot. But apparently in Utah, someone has gone around and collected a whole bunch of these stories, and maybe in the future I could possibly read some of them to you, because I could probably get my hands on them at some point. I just have to find the right person. So the three Nephites were three people that Jesus spoke to here in America when he came and visited in America. He assembled 12 disciples here in America like he did back in Israel. They went out and they proselyted. And he asked the 12 disciples what they would ask of him before he left. Three of these Nephites said that they wanted to be around until the second coming. So these three Nephites, of course, have been wandering around these areas ever since. Of course, we have no idea where. As a result, with this Mormon folklore, there are all kinds of stories where people have talked about, oh, I've seen the three Nephites, or the three Nephites did this or this. One story that I heard from an institute teacher of mine said there was this one about a family that was stranded out in the middle of the snow. There was no one around. They were desperate, and they prayed. And then suddenly, three people showed up on snowmobiles that came out and helped them out, and then before they could drive off and head to their destination. Of course, one stops and thinks about it and says, oh my gosh, that must have been the three Nephites. So there are just a ton of stories about that. Whenever there are three people that are involved in doing something, then that is attributed to the three Nephites. Maybe when I have talked to people and gotten more stories, I can tell you some more about those. I can't wait to look into them, because I've never been able to find a place that had a whole lot of stories there. One other thing that I encountered at this Western States Folklore Society meeting was the idea of the foodways, how you make food, different recipes. Different areas, of course, have their own recipes, things that they are famous for, the kinds of foods people eat, or how you make this particular recipe. This kind of study is called the foodways in folklore. And of course, it is a form of folklore. It is traditional culture that is not, it's non-formal traditional culture. One of the kinds of foods that I hadn't really thought about is is what people call funeral potatoes. Essentially, a tradition's come about that whenever there's a funeral or whenever someone passes on, and sometimes whenever a missionary leaves to go somewhere and you aren't going to see them for a long time, there's a kind of potato recipe that they use that involves cheese, potatoes, sour cream, and a bunch of other things. They've come under the name and designation of funeral potatoes because they're just always served after funerals. When I was younger and in California, so I wasn't in Utah, maybe that has something to do with why this tradition is a little bit different for me, but we used to call the very same thing missionary potatoes because my mom used to always make these whenever the missionaries were about to come. And me, I just hated these missionary potatoes. They were not anything that I thought was worth having. I preferred baked potatoes. I preferred mashed potatoes. But these missionary potatoes were ugh. And so whenever my mom said the missionaries were coming over, I just knew that they were going to be making these potatoes. You know, take it as you will. The making of these kinds of foods for special events, you have to have turkey on Thanksgiving. There are, of course, other things that go on as well. You don't have to have turkey, but that's the biggest, most often done tradition food-wise when it comes to Thanksgiving, along with stuffing and yams. And then there's what you do on Easter. My family always did turkey and ham. I'm not sure if it was because, well, we need to feed a whole lot of people because we have a large family, or if it's because, well, I know some people actually prefer ham to turkey, so we'll serve both turkey and ham. Ever since I can remember, there has been both ham and turkey at an Easter dinner. That's just a couple of the different food traditions that have come to us over the years called the foodways. Like when I was in Texas, there were black people. They were just the best people who knew how to barbecue there. The farther east you go, closer to Louisiana, you have these Cajun customs where they have this really spicy powder that they like to put on everything. I knew someone who gave me some mac and cheese once, and it turned out that he laced it with this really spicy stuff, and I ate it down. But it was like, oh, I was breathing fire for a while. I am just not used to hot Cajun food like that. But a lot of times you just eat what you're given, and I had plenty of water there to drink down as I ate it. So I guess I'd like to end this particular section with this, and always appreciate your own personal traditions, your food traditions, your stories, your family stories, because they are precious and you should always keep them around. I am tempted to go and record the stories from my family members who might not be with us for much longer. And there are always so many interesting stories. My grandpa had so many stories that he had when he worked on the railroad, and I don't know if anyone ever wrote them down. I'm hoping, but that is just uncertain. And I will leave you with that thought as I carry on to one final thing, one subject that I want to talk about considering the time of year that it is. And that day that I'm referring to, of course, is that of May Day, which is on May 1st. So you might have looked on your calendars sometime and seeing that May 1st was May Day. So do you know why it is that that's on the calendar, where it comes from? Why do they think it's important enough to let us all know about it? Well, unlike today, there are some really ancient traditions that used to be celebrated on May Day that don't have to do with the labor unions like some union activity happens today. But celebrating May Day dates back about several centuries, if not a couple millennia, that can be traced to the British Isles. May Day is Beltane to the Irish, and on that day, they would actually celebrate it by setting up a maypole and wrapping ribbons around it, and then what they would do is they would sing and dance while circling around the maypole, and once they do that, there were like a certain number of circles around the pole that you did for different things. This time, the people will know if they're going to have a good harvest or not. If the harvest, if the shoots that they see are not impressive enough and that they need to maybe get a little bit more divine intervention, they would do different things to help encourage the gods to step in and help them out. And in some places, when they were celebrating this, they also had a giant bonfire, kind of like Guy Fawkes Night. That happened mostly after, in the twilight times, just before darkness, when they set those up. And of course, there's always the marriage that got arranged during that time of year as well. This might be unknown to you, but what they would do is they would bring two people together, a young man and a young woman, and then they would see if they were still together at the end of the celebrations. If after sundown they're still together, the celebration would continue on till morning, and then they would officially be engaged to be married in 6 weeks. So, nice old tradition about bringing people together. And I don't know if you have read Hawthorne's Maypole of Merrymount, but that also deals a bit potential May Day celebrations. The Maypole of Merrymount, which is the name of the story, deals with an actual event that happened when Thomas Morton, who is considered the first colonial pagan, showed up and set up a colony in the New World. And he invited a lot of people over there to join his community. They would do these celebrations with the Maypole and these dances and events. And of course, the Puritans, who were the neighbors not too far away, heard this and thought, oh my gosh, this horrible pagan is out there just cursing God and destroying all righteousness that's going on in this particular land that we've inhabited, and something needs to be done about it. And so I think it was John Endicott, it could be Cotton Mather, but I think it was John Endicott who took a group of people over to where Morton's colony was and just wiped it out. People died and a lot of people were just taken back out of there. And Thomas More actually wrote a journal called The New English Canon that talks about what he did and what happened to him and his colony while he and his people were just minding their own business, and a bunch of these rabid religious types just can't deal with reality. That's pretty much what the situation was there. And of course, the colony was named Merrymount, just so you know. That's why that story is called the Maypole of Merrymount. May Day is a very old tradition. It is something that I've discovered actually still is celebrated in a few places, but you never hear about it. I never see it on the news or anything. You have to look it up on YouTube, or you have to look it up online in some places. And then who knows, maybe you can go and join in the celebration, especially if you're a single person and you want to get married. Maybe they can arrange that, but I don't know if they still arrange marriages that way. I'd like to end with you on that note then. Whenever these holidays come around with names that you have no idea where they came from, I encourage you to look it up and find out, why is this day even mentioned in calendars when we don't know anything about it, like Groundhog Day or any other day where it's significant to some people because they're celebrating it, but in other parts of the country they just are thinking, what the heck are you doing? Because things that have originally been all over the continent are now only done in little dinky colonial type settings or little towns where people can appreciate it who want to go there. So I will end things here then. And I also ask that if any of you have any ideas of things you would like to see on Baladishanish, just go ahead and email me what you'd like me to talk about at folklorenow33@gmail.com, and I will look it over, and if I think it's relevant and worthy of the folklore tradition, I will put it here on my podcast. If you want to record something yourself, or if you have something that you would like me to play for you or to read to you, then go ahead and pass that on to me. And with that, I bid thee adieu and have a nice day, and thanks for listening to Baladishanish.